Blog Talk Radio.
Marvin didn't try to be magic or charismatic and all that. He just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique. It was special.
Can you see why not let
The man you're about to see and hear, should you be so foolish as to have just joined us, is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. Three, four.
I got something, y'all, in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to sing along. Every voice and sing, till it in heaven ring, ring with the harmony. Oh, let it be. Let our rejoice and rise high. Loud as the orgia.
Yeah. Well, Papi, straight from the tired, stressed out, or just need me or we time? Then Phoenix Rising, Baltimore's exclusive bed and breakfast, is the place for you. Phoenix Rising offers an unforgettable, rejuvenating experience with exquisite guest rooms. Find peace and calm in the Sedona Room or Haitian Room, or relax in front of a marble fireplace in the Serengeti Room. Call 410-462-2692 today to schedule your escape to Phoenix Rising. Visit us online at phoenixrising.com. Tired, stressed out, or just need me or we time? Then Phoenix Rising, Baltimore's exclusive bed and breakfast, is the place for you. Phoenix Rising offers an unforgettable, rejuvenating experience with exquisite guest rooms. Find peace and calm in the Sedona Room or Haitian Room, or relax in front of a marble fireplace in the Serengeti Room. Call 410-462-2692 today to schedule your escape to Phoenix Rising. Visit us online at phoenixrising.com.
When were you last on an amazing vacation? I'm Tracy Lewis, leisure travel specialist with Pogo World Travel, and I'm here to tell you that you don't have to go it alone when planning the vacation of a lifetime. So the next time you're looking for expert advice on that perfect vacation, you've got Pogo World Travel every step of the way. Visit our website at gowithpogo.com today and find out why they say, go with Pogo World Travel and discover your dream of vacation come true.
Do you hear that sound? Well, that's the sound of back pain. Are you tired of nagging and persistent back pain? Whether you're suffering from a chronic condition or a recent injury, don't fret. Chiropractic has proven to be a natural and holistic alternative to pain medications and surgical procedures. Visit Dr. Todd Tucker at our Water Tower location on Chicago's Magnificent Mile for a free consultation and exam. Call 888-535-2381 to get started with your personalized treatment plan. That's 888-535-2381. Call now.
Are you the parent of a troubled teen, or you just want to have a closer relationship with your child? If so, sign up for our free webinar called 5 Easy Tips to Effective Communication with Your Teen right now, hosted by teen expert Release Henry. Log on to successfulteenparenting.com/webinar.
Walking down the street now is a dangerous thing. There are drug dealers, crack houses, gang members, and crackheads. People fighting, cursing, and killing too. So much chaos, we don't know what to do. But if people only knew that they are hurting little children, if they could only see what our community could be. When in consultation, 1, stay calm. 2, try to say something positive. 3, tell the person what's on your mind. 4, ask if the person understands. 5, thank the person for listening if you can. Come on, y'all, let's be an example. It has to start somewhere. How about now? For more information on ways to prevent violent crimes, contact Totally Positive Productions at 773-488-9553.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to Jimmy Lee's Underground Radio Network. Today's show is going to be a strange show. I'm going to have topics basically all across the board. And one of my topics later on, I'm going to have my cat, Brother Charles Love, of Think or Die. He sent me some information I want to talk to you about Mississippi. Test on umbilical cords to find paternity. We're going to be dealing with that in the second half hour. But this first 45 or so minutes I got, let me deal with some Chicago stuff. Now, this alderman here in Chicago by the name of Howard Brookins, he's proposing a littering ordinance. You know, that's when you put an ordinance out there like a law. To fine people $1,500 for littering. $1,500 for littering. And if you call littering out your car, i.e. on the cigarette butt out there, or, you know what I'm saying, ashtray, what have you, your car can be towed. Now, people here in Chicago, tax dollars pay for street sanitation, keep our streets and roadway clean, but they feel that fining individuals $1,500 will solve the littering problem. Even though in some neighborhoods and communities there's no garbage cans and no regular pickup because of budget shorts and cuts down, the city of Chicago is still trying to find ways to pick and nanny and nanny and pick citizens for every dime they can get. To sell out all our stuff, all our assets and stuff, privatize everything. Now all of us have to pay. I'm going to play some little literature, information on that a little bit later on. But today, man, today was 3 weeks ago, a candidate starts seeking re-election. Jesse goes down next week, and the black caucus in Chicago are taking hits. I mean, for the first time since his Black Panther radical days, since the days of looking for him when Chairman Fred Hampton was assassinated, everybody with Bobby Rush, even though since the days of everybody looking at him, he's never been so pounded and sweated by the media as he is now. The Tribune got it like this. Light sheds on Bobby Rush and the Metro scandal. We're going to deal with that. I'm going to have to pull up a little commentary and read upon it. But, you know, then I started looking up the things for Bobby Rush. And then when it comes down to Bobby Rush and Metro, you got Bobby Rush, I'll stop Metro in his tracks, April 26th. Metro, black lawmakers clash over minority hiring, May 3rd. That's the Daily Herald. Let me see. Let's go down. August 23rd, 2012. All the other dates of 2012, April 26th, 2012, May 3rd, 2012, August 23rd, 2012. Congressman Bobby Rush and Metro host a minority contract summit. April 28th, 2012. Congressman Bobby Rush urging Metro to hire minorities. Now, that's great, all those things. But the door over there is an opinion piece that's read Chicago Tribune. Four board members we have resigned. Who's next? Now, they did a big article in the Tribune, 4 or 5 pages, I'm not going to really run to it. You can Google Bobby Rush and Metro and find out for yourself. Minutes before the Metro Rail Board approved a generous settlement meant to secure a quiet exit of CEO Alex Gifford, Chairman Brad Halloran, O'Halloran, hope I'm saying it right, please don't trip on my Irish speaking, even though Chicago is Irish. Even though Chicago is an Irish town. The board believes it's critical that Metro moves in a different direction. One built on finding a new consensus in Springfield and Washington to develop new resources and to serve our passengers and our community. The Metro is a railway, is a real transit authority system. It helps us get people back and forth through the city and the suburban area. Clifford, in other words, did not play nicely with politicians. Taxpayers should be grateful that now they know what Clifford and the politicians were butting heads over. He had rejected House Speaker Michael Madigan's request to hire, promote, or give raises to Democratic foot soldiers. He rebuffed State Rep. Louis Edero attempt to meddle in the section of a key Metro deputy. He refused to sign a $50,000 check to an organization named by U.S. Bobby Rush to provide a vaguely described service never discussed by the Metro board anymore. That $50,000 side deal was supposedly meant to ensure that jobs on a $93 million Englewood flyover contract went to African Americans who live nearby. Now, my full disclosure, I'm cool with my man Larry Huckins, that's my guy, and my girl's got to. My girl Hetty, you know, see, I mean, my cat Larry. Larry's a cool cat. He actually represents him a lot of times at Ozos, but you know, full disclosure, but he's going to read the article anyway. Larry Huggins, who at times was acting board chairman, had delayed a vote on the contract because of a protest launched by Rush and community leaders. You know the headlines I read to you earlier. Though the contractors, Elgin-based IHC Contracting Corporation, met federal guidelines for minority protest for minority participation, the protesters demanded assurance that jobs will go to blacks living in and around Inglewood. Again, the headlines I was reading you that Bobby Rush was into. An ad hoc committee eventually negotiated a memorandum of understanding with a contractor who agreed to let black-owned construction companies bid for work beyond the 25% already included in the proposal. And that was supposed to be that the committee members told the Tribune they never talked about Metro paying anyone to monitor compliance with the memorandum. But in testimony before the Regional Transportation Authority, the RTA board, Clifford said Larry Huggins told him to cut a $50,000 check to a group named by Bobby Rush. When Clifford insisted board approval, he said Larry Huggins dropped the request. All of this might have been avoided, Clifford told the RTA board, if Target Group, a consulting firm owned by a business associate of Huggins, had fulfilled the terms of a $200,000 no-bid contract in Gap for Metro with help for Huggins and Bobby Rush in 2010. Target was supposed to recruit and pre-qualify minority bidders, Clifford said, but terminated its contract because it was over-budgeted and far from finished with the work. It's safe to say the whole Inglewood flyover episode did not earn Clifford any points. Consensus building had any points for consensus building, at least not in the eyes of O'Halloran and Higgins. Convinced that they were conspiring to oust him, Clifford threatened to file a whistleblower lawsuit. That led to the infamous $780,000 we here in Illinois got to pay this guy. Separation agreement with the mutual confidentiality clause, but the scandal could not be contained. Four members left, including Higgins and O'Halloran. Now, Huggins and O'Halloran. Now, that's my cat, Bobby Rush. Now, it's no secret that I ran against Bobby Rush in the primary. No, excuse me. I tried to meet Bobby Rush in the general. I lost in my primary. And I was going to, I wanted to debate him, take him on a lot of key issues that I feel that were out there in the neighborhood. A lot of people said I was going against tough waters, what have you. Bobby Rush is unbeatable. Jimmy Lee, stay away from it, you know. You know, I don't think I was a threat. Matter of fact, I knew I was a threat to the fact that, you know, the Democrats ran some Republicans in the Republican primary against me, and that prevented me from meeting Rush. But that guy's lied. Let me show you how live Bobby Rush really is. This is Bobby Rush back in 2000 when he's debating Barack Obama. Run that script, Evan.
One of the districts historically from BIPOC within the United States has produced leaders that have been both important in the Chicago area and nationally as well.
This is Chicago Tonight, Monday, March 13th, 2000.
Two high-visibility challengers take on Congressman Bobby Rush. Good evening and welcome to Chicago Tonight. I'm Phil Ponce. Congressman Bobby Rush is in his fourth term representing Illinois' 1st Congressional District. But now he has two challengers, each of whom appears to have the name recognition, organization, and campaign war chest to pose a threat to Rush's serving term number 5. Tonight, the congressman tells us why he deserves to keep his job and the lead challengers tell us why one of them should take his place. But first, to Rich Samuels.
Hey, Daddy, that was a trick. That was a trick that Barack pulled at the Chatham Business Association. Remember?
The three major candidates hope to serve or continue serving a district that runs from 26th Street to 103rd along the lakefront. From Bronzeville, the district's northern edge but historic heart, comes Bobby Rush, former Black Panther, Chicago alderman, the incumbent, first elected in 1992. From Hyde Park, home of the University of Chicago, comes Barack Obama, a Harvard-trained U of C law professor and state senator, first sent to Springfield in 1995. From Chatham, south and east, comes Donnie Trotter, a public health administrator who served in the Illinois House from 1988 to 1993 and in the Senate thereafter. That a Democrat will represent the first, that an African-American will represent the district, these are foregone conclusions. As a discussion on the government's role in health care reform at a weekend candidates forum illustrates, it's not ideology that separates the candidates.
I support universal health care coverage. I've been a strong advocate at the state level of universal health care.
I have been many times the lone voice in fighting for a universal health care system here in the state of Illinois.
The fight in the first centers around the vulnerabilities of the incumbent. Bobby Rush's loss to Richard M. Daley in last year's mayoral contest was, in fact, resounding. He won only 45% of the African-American vote.
It seems as though I have lost this election, but I want you to know that I don't consider myself a loser.
Rush now faces two strong challengers in a district that's truly special.
I think more than anything else, it's the history. It has one of the richest histories in American politics in the congressional district. It certainly is one of the premier districts historically for Black politics within the United States, going back to DePriest and Dawson.
Oscar DePriest, elected in 1928, William Dawson, his successor, on to Ralph Metcalf, Harold Washington, Charles Hayes.
Has produced leaders that have been both important in the Chicago area and nationally as well.
Can Bobby Rush claim the medal for another term? Challengers are attempting to put their best images forward, likewise attempting to get the incumbents. Carver Tonight, this is Rich Samuels.
And now I'm joined by Congressman Bobby Rush of the 1st Congressional District, State Senator Barack Obama, and State Senator Donnie Trotter. And we should note there is a fourth candidate running in the Democratic primary. He is George Robey, a retired Chicago police officer. It was our judgment that viewers would benefit most from a discussion with the major candidates only, and I welcome you all to Chicago Tonight. Congressman Rush, in endorsing Senator Obama, the Chicago Tribune wrote of you that he touts experience and seniority, but his approach to problems has not produced many results. And the Daily Southbound, in endorsing Senator Obama, said of you, after four terms, we don't believe he has accomplished enough on behalf of his district. Respond to these statements that you've not been very productive.
Well, in both instances, I certainly think that those are probably some of the most misguided opinions that I've witnessed in the media, particularly as it relates to endorsements. My record is outstanding. My record is open for public inspection. I believe that the president certainly has endorsed me based on my record. I believe that the AFL-CIO has endorsed me based on my record. I believe that the 100-plus African-American ministers have endorsed me based on my record. I believe that Reverend Jesse Jackson endorsed me based on my record. I believe that over 125 women leaders in the 1st Congressional District based on endorsed me based on my record. My record, I brought back over $1.5 billion return the tax monies of my constituents back to the district. I've helped create jobs, expand businesses, create businesses in the 1st Congressional District. I have an excellent record. Let me just tell you, Phil, one of the things that I'm most proud of is the $20 million that I brought back in the last 2 years to wire public schools and libraries for the Internet so that our children will have access to computers. South Lakeshore Drive right now, it's improved based on the federal dollars that I brought back into the 1st Congressional District. South Lakeshore itself is being repaired right now. Construction crews, construction equipment, is there working based on federal dollars that I brought back into the 1st Congressional District. We have an empowerment law in the 1st Congressional District that came with a $100 million grant from the federal government.
Congressman, I know you can go through a litany of your accomplishments, and I'm sure you would invite viewers to do that at your website. Senator Obama, let me pick up on the business of the record and look at something that was raised in the in Rich Samuels' introductory piece, and that is that the three of you basically and some of the major issues really feel the same way. We saw the example about health care. What makes you different from the congressman and from Senator Trotter?
Well, one of the things that we talked about throughout this campaign is that I don't think there are a lot of ideological differences. I think all three of us are progressive urban Democrats. I think we share most views. We have some disagreements that have emerged over the couple of debates that all three of us have been at. You know, Congressman Rush is more hesitant about campaign finance reform. That's a high priority for me. You know, Senator Trotter, in discussions about taxes, has talked about flat taxes as a possibility. That's something that, you know, we may differ on. But for the most part, I think we agree ideologically. I think that the issue in this race really is leadership. As your introductory piece noted, this is a historic district. And the question for the voters in the 1st Congressional District is who can best articulate and frame the issues that are most important to voters in those in the district, and who can provide leadership to organize resources, both federal and state and municipal, at the local level to make a difference on issues that count, like education, health care, jobs, and economic development. And my assessment is that my experience, not only as a legislator, but also as a civil rights attorney, as a community organizer, gives me the leadership skills to provide to really make a difference in this race.
Senator Obama, how do you respond to the concern that you are raising so much money from outside the district that in your case you will be, quote, beholden to interests outside the district?
Well, you know, the truth of the matter is actually that we have raised about $400,000 in this race. Congressman Rush, I don't know exactly what he's raised, but I think he's indicated that he plans to raise about $600,000. 99% of our money comes from individuals as opposed to PACs, and approximately 40% of our money comes from individuals within the district. That's just itemized. In fact, we have probably more African-American contributors and small donors who live inside the district than any of the candidates involved. Now, it's true that I also have been able to raise money outside the district, in part because I've got relationships throughout this city. And I think that's actually a benefit, because I think that one of the things that we need in this office is somebody who's able to create coalitions and work across a wide spectrum of interests, and I think that's something I can provide.
Senator Trotter, getting back to the Tribune editorial that I quoted from earlier, of you, editorial said, Trotter has been a capable senator, but it seems telling that his political sponsor, Cook County Board President John Stroger, is supporting Rush. How strong is your base?
My base is very strong. What we know is 57% of the vote that comes out of the 1st Congressional District comes out of my legislative district. Through the past five elections that I've won in Illinois General Assembly, I go down there with the number one vote out of all the members that sit there. That's more than the Democrats, Republican, be it black or white. So we have a very strong base, and we're individuals who know the record and know the works that I've done and the works that I'm capable of doing. To say that I'm just capable in doing my job is very a big understatement. I have done some miraculous things, I've done some phenomenal things, and on behalf of our community, and that is as being the chief negotiator on the budget, I have brought back dollars to our community that's unprecedented. We have brought back $55 million for the South and the Lakeshore Drive, $500 million just to rebuild the Dan Ryan, $45 million for the university that sits in my district, Chicago State University, $3 million for the DuSable Museum. These are dollars in proportion to our $45 billion budget, which says that we are really bringing back those things that's going to enrich and enhance the lives of our community. You compare that to a $1.7 trillion budget that the United States has, there's no comparison that should be said.
Congressman, you mentioned some of the things that you've done. Is there one specific thing that you can point to that and tell the voters that this warrants my re-election? What is it that you went through the list, but is there one thing in particular that strikes you as compelling?
Let's talk about the inward leg of the congressman from the 1st Congressional District. The CTA would have demolished that hill, that leg of the Greenwood line by now.
It would not be there.
Well,
you granted that?
I agree that he supported retaining the green line. I think that's fair to say.
I helped find the money, the federal dollars.
But can I also add, Englewood has been festering over there for almost 25, 30 years. For 7 years that he's been in office, he's acting as if it was the city of Atlantis and just popped up this year, that some action is actually being taken over there. He's had the ability and the resources and the friendships with the president that he could have been doing some very proactive things over there before Englewood started festering into other communities. So there is great that now that you're discovering bringing dollars over there and bringing Hastert through the community really hasn't really changed their quality of life. Right now, you've put finally some plans on the table, but we have not still at this point in time seen any kind of action that's being taken.
Well, Senator Trotter, I know that you're a wise man and you seem very, very astute on the issues, but let me ask you if you will respond to the fact that the U.S. Steel, the Softworks, which I believe is located in your district, it's been vacant. That land has been vacant for 25 years now, and you've been in the Congress, the state senate for a number of years. That land has an enormous potential to help solve problems not only in the Englewood community but in the general South Side. I have never seen you forward a plan to do anything with that Southwest land, over there. And let me just tell you, the problem on the South Side in general, in terms of joblessness and the lack of economic power, is the fact that once that Southwest plant closed down, nothing replaced it. And so you had all those jobs leaving the South Side of the city of Chicago.
Let's not get back on Southworks. I know it's an important issue, but in the short time
it also was privately owned, and they wanted to sell the whole land, and there was a lot of remediation they had to go over there.
Your point is well taken. Let's move on to the next subject, please. And that is Senator Obama. One of the things that one looks at Congressman Rush's record and the things that he says, if there's a Democratic Congress that comes into power this November, he's in line maybe to get some important committee assignments, influence for the district. One looks at Congressman Rush's record and the things that he says. If there's a Democratic Congress that comes into power this November, he's in line maybe to get some important committee assignments, influence for the district based on his seniority could be ratcheted up a notch. What's your response to that?
Well, I think that seniority is important, but I think vision and imagination and hard work is more important. I think that Congressman Rush, for example, was not concerned about seniority when he ran against the previous Congressman Hayes, who he supplanted because he thought he could bring more energy and focus to the job. I feel the same way now, that I can bring more energy and focus to the job. And I think, we were just talking about economic development and jobs in the district. The South Side of Chicago, by the Congressman's own acknowledgement, has not prospered at the same rate as the North Side or the Northwest Corridor. That's not entirely the Congressman's fault. I think there are a lot of factors involved in that. But one of the things that we talked about in this campaign, and we've been very specific, is the need for a strategy, an agenda for economic growth in the South Side of Chicago. Right now, we don't have one.
And what would your priorities be?
Well, I think that the priorities would have to be combining education and workforce training to make sure that we've got the human capital in place to compete in a high-tech, high-wage economy, and that we actually are not only attracting businesses into the area, but also that we are training entrepreneurs and helping them grow their businesses. And one of the things that I found in walking around the commercial strips in our area is that very few businesses that already exist in the area actually know what kind of federal help they can get. Part of it's just information flows. And one of the arguments I think I have against Congressman Rush in this race is that he has not been particularly accessible in terms of letting businesses know how the federal government can assist them in terms of growing their businesses and how we can market the community to attract new businesses in the community. We've got a lot of vacant land out there, and I think that there would be a great interest in locating jobs in the community if, in fact, we did a better marketing job.
Senator Obama, let me follow up with a question on that. Is one of the criticisms that arises in connection with your candidacy is you simply haven't been in the Senate very long, the state Senate. You have a limited track record in terms of time. What is your argument based on the one term that you've served in the Senate so far that makes you prepared for the Congress?
Well, I'm in my second term, but it's true that certainly both Senator Trotter and Congressman Rush have been in elected office longer than I have. I can't deny that. I would argue, though, that my experience previous to elected office equips me for the job. You know, I have a background as an attorney. I've represented affordable housing organizations to build affordable housing, something that's a major issue in the district. I've chaired major philanthropic efforts in the city, like the Chicago Annenberg Challenge that gave $50 million to prompt school reform efforts throughout the city. I've been a community organizer and helped design programs at the ground level. And so one of the things that I think we need as we enter into the new millennium is somebody who's got the skill set required not only to deal with government, but also to be able to put government programs together with non-for-profit and the private sector to make things work for people in the district.
Congressman.
I'd just like to say this. I mean, I really have a lot of respect for both of my challenges. That's why I'm working so hard. But, you know, they have a record. I mean, Senator Barak, he represents a part of Inglewood. His district has always been in Inglewood. Inglewood's always been in this district. What has he done? They have records in the state senate. What have they done? They want to, of course, because they're running for Congress. Now they all of a sudden they can do a better job. Maybe they can. I don't believe that they can because I believe that I've been one of the most effective members of the Illinois delegation. One of the most effective members of Congress, representing my district in Washington, and then coming back and leading on issues of importance to my constituencies here at home.
Senator Trotter, what would your priorities be? Well, certainly we have to deal with economic development, but you have to look at the holistic approach of how we're going to really make our district much stronger and how we're really going to enhance the quality of life of individuals. What we've been hearing here is one who I believe is talking in rhetoric again and someone else who's talking in theory. What we've been doing is trying to address the health care needs because we know health care is where everything begins. We know we can have the best school system in the world. We can have a computer on every desk. But if we have a child who needs glasses, they're not going to be able to see the screen. If we have children who cannot hear the lessons of brilliant teachers, they're not going to learn. What I've been able to do in the state legislature is craft one of the best health care programs for our kids, and it's called Kid Care. And that gives them that healthy start so they can start to learn, so they can go in and be prepared to learn. And then from there, would you have a healthy and an educated community, you can have individuals who are not just looking for jobs, and they both talk about job training, but career training for individuals. And that's part of also putting in programs in the curriculum, which is really going to pique the imagination, nurture those minds of individuals who don't want to just work at McDonald's, who would like to be the entrepreneurs in our community. Senator, how do you respond to the perception that you, both you and Senator Obama, are basically making a preparatory run in a sense because you sense political weakness on the part of the congressman, and in effect, you're not just running this time around, but you're looking ahead 2 years down the road?
Well, as an elected official, I'm always looking to the next election, but I plan on winning this one, but I'm now just running to win this one and to make sure that we have a good start on what we have to do. I have a 12-year record in the Illinois General Assembly, and that is one of accomplishments, one who listens to the community and takes their ideas and make them into laws, not just talk about them, not just look for a photo op, but also put my legs up under the table and make things happen. I have been able to really build coalitions down in Springfield. I've been able, using my negotiating skills, to walk across the side of the aisle, the other side of the aisle, and get things done. Every piece of legislation, piece of legislation that we put on the table in Springfield, I know that not only I have to give my colleagues my 26 votes, but I need 4 votes on the other side. When you start out with that kind of premise, then you know what you have to do.
And speaking of premises and what you have to do, aren't the three of you really depending, sort of counting on the other two to split the vote to enable you to sort of walk through?
Let me respond to your initial question, is the issue of Congressman Rush perceived weakness, which I saw on the tape as well. I actually thought Congressman Rush did a good thing running against the mayor, because I don't think anybody should have a pass. I don't think Congressman Rush in this situation should have a pass. I don't think the mayor should have a pass. I don't get a pass for my state Senate seat. What I was concerned about in the race was the inability, I think, to focus attention on the issues that really matter in this city. And part of what's important about this...
You mean Candidate Rush did not focus on that.
Candidate Rush. And so, but the reason I say that is to give the credit where credit is due. I think that Congressman Rush did a brave thing running, and I don't want it perceived that somehow he's being punished for that race. What I think what's important is that that we have a chance now to raise expectations of voters in terms of what the congressman can accomplish.
I certainly disagree with the Senator Obama. He did get a pass in his first effort out in terms of running for the Senate. He and others knocked his predecessor, Senator Alice Palmer, off the ballot.
But how about
so
the
he got a free pass on his first time.
But how about the political consequences of running for mayor? Do you feel that you were weakened politically as a result of
that? Absolutely not. I believe that I was strengthened. I believe that people who observed that election, people who listened to the issues, they know that I brought out issues that were relevant, issues that were concerned to them.
Congressman, I'm going to ask you to continue. As the credits are rolling, I'll get back to you. Congressman, to finish your statement, I'd like to thank my guests for joining me tonight, State Senator Barack Obama, Congressman Bobby Rush, and State Senator Donnie Trotter, and I thank you for watching. Tomorrow night in this program, we'll hear from candidates for another office, Clerk of the Circuit Court. My colleague Elizabeth Brackett will be here at 7 and again at 11:30. And a reminder, if you'd like to suggest a question or if you'd like for us to send you an email in the afternoon telling you what topic we're doing that night, you can log on to our website at WTTW.com. I'm Phil Ponce. Hope to see you next time. You want to finish that on
your team? I think these challenges, they basically misread the tea leaves. I'm very, very strong. Just be strong because I have a record, a visible record, a record of engagement, a record of results, a record of achievement, a record of being present and accessible.
We'll find out.
Misreading the ceiling.
We'll find out.
It may be visible, but it's not measurable. And when we talk about the seniority issue, seniority was not important to the congressman 9 months ago when he did run for mayor. Not saying
up, and I know she's going to stay up there on the Hill this week and keep meeting with senators, and you'll be all over it. Thank you, Kelly. And joining us now, MSNBC political analyst Richard Wolff, but more importantly, he is the author of the new book just published, Renegade, The Making of a President, detailing his time with the president as first a Newsweek campaign reporter and, of course, a reporter for MSNBC, and it is an amazing book, really in the tradition of Teddy White, the great tradition of 1960 of the making of the president. So we are so pleased that you could take time from book tour to be with us today. First of all, the White House reaction. You acknowledge that when you first were covering Barack Obama at the beginning and you started with him very early on and then in Iowa, it was really Barack Obama who suggested that you write this book?
That's right. You know, we were on the plane one day, and actually this was sort of after the race speech in Philadelphia, so it was a bit further on, and he said, you know, why don't you write a book about this whole thing? And, you know, I love those Teddy White books. They were really great. And I actually told him it was a stupid idea, and which tells you how much I know. And the people...
Barack Obama as my book agent. I like those.
Yeah. Except I told him that it was a kind of book people wouldn't want to read. I reconsidered my position. I went back to him and said maybe it was a good idea. And he said, yeah, that's why I'm running for president, because I have a few good ideas.
Got a few good ideas indeed. Now, you have a lot of newsy nuggets in here, aside from really digging deep and understanding a man as no one else has been able to. But you refer to the race speech. You report that he wanted to do a speech, the timing wasn't right, but then he made one last-minute appeal to
Jeremiah Wright. You know, he delivered the speech, and then they knew, having come out of the Pennsylvania primary, which they lost, very painful experience, they knew that the next phase was going to be dominated by Wright's comeback tour. Remember, he was at the press club. They didn't know how bad it would be, but they knew we would all focus on it. So he decided that was the moment to reach out to him directly. There was a meeting, a secret meeting, at Wright's house in Chicago.
Have they accomplished that?
Well, there was all sorts of back and forth, intermediaries. It was very difficult. Trinity Church, the place where he had worshipped and Wright had really built up, was divided between a pro-Obama camp and a pro-Wright camp. And there were intermediaries who sort of negotiated this. He went around to the house and he said, listen, you're headed for vilification, not vindication. And he was right, and Wright was wrong.
right was wrong. Now, as you know, Brian Williams has had this amazing access to the White House. No one has ever photographed and captured the essence of the East Wing and the West Wing the way Brian has in the documentary that aired, the first part last night, the second part tonight at 9 o'clock. And this is part of what Brian discussed with the president in terms of work-life balance and how the president has found the White House so far. Let's watch.
I've got two young ladies who are laughing and screaming and wrestling with the dog, and I've got a wife who's trying to make sure that I keep my head on straight. And you know, we've got soccer games, and you know, we've got you know, parent-teacher conferences, and so that keeps you grounded and provides you with some perspective.
Now, with that as setup, you report a lot about Michelle and Barack Obama. What was going on back in 2000 when he was first in this, many would say, ill-considered congressional race against Bobby Rush?
Well, they were going through a hard time. They had young children, newborns, and he was off on this quest, futile quest, to reach the House of Representatives. And Michelle Obama, really until this presidential campaign, didn't buy into his campaign. She didn't like campaigning. She thought it was a sort of frivolous waste. Not the policy part of it, not the public service. She didn't like the whole campaign politics, the game of it all. And there were tensions there, real tensions. They were in a much better position by the time this presidential campaign. But it is interesting. This is the time this family has had together more than any other point since the children were born. And that had to come in the White House. That's a pretty extraordinary situation.
Well, in fact, that came up with Michelle Obama and Brian. I wanted to play a little bit of that part of the interview where they talked about this balance and how they've been able to actually have more time together.
Okay.
I think I've been at their school two or three times this week. But that is no different from what I did before all of this. And it's no different from what every parent that I know.
So Michelle Obama and Barack Obama, he told Brian that they managed to have dinner from 6:30 to 8:00. That is their time. But there was another tough time that you report about in Renegade when he lost Texas and Ohio. What happened?
That's right. Look, the first year was very tough. They didn't like being away from, he didn't like being on the road and being away from the kids. And she was campaigning for the first time and campaigning hard for him. She's a very competitive person. Texas and Ohio was their chance to seal the deal, to land the knockout punch, and they blew it. And she came out the day after that election and said, in the campaign car on the way to the airport, to her husband and David Plouffe, then campaign manager, unless they got a winning strategy, she was not going to come out and campaign again. And it was an ultimatum that maybe we were all used to in our various relationships. But she's tough.
Speak for yourself.
Okay, I'm speaking for myself.
But that is tough.
But that was very tough. And, you know, it speaks to this idea that there was only one reason for doing this, and that was because it was serious. This wasn't an exercise in vanity. She wanted to do this to win, and she is possibly even more competitive than he is. In fact, he told me that she doesn't like playing card games because she hates losing that much.
Now, let's talk about someone who's also competitive, but when you see them together sometimes, these days at least, there are awkward moments. Joe Biden.
Right.
Talk about Joe Biden. In your book, you say, quote, Obama's challenge was not Bush's. He was in no danger of watching a powerful vice president hijack his administration. Biden's experience never fazed him. If anything, he was more distracted by his vice president's indiscipline. He can't keep his mouth shut, said one senior Obama aide.
Right.
I won't ask you who that aide was, but it does reflect a restlessness that you see sometimes in Obama's body language. Most recently, when Sotomayor was being announced in the East Room, there was some awkwardness there, but most memorably, Justice Roberts.
Right. Well, look, here's a guy who they think his heart is in the right place, but his mouth isn't. So, you know, they have a, there's such a contrast on the discipline side of it. For President Obama, a man who has really created himself as a disciplined force in a way that he wasn't in his youth. And Joe Biden, a man, as one friend of his just told me recently, who didn't have a boss for 20 or 30 years. And it ends up that his first boss after all this time is someone he frankly disdained when he first entered the Senate. He only came to respect him when Obama beat him through the primaries. And so, you know, having to adjust to this boss, a disciplined person, has been a difficult transition, I think, for Biden. And maybe that transition is still underway.
You could see, physically see, when Joe Biden told a joke at Justice Robert's expense at that second swearing in.
You could absolutely
see the president
stepping
in and touching him on the back. You also, of course, write about Hillary Clinton and the fact that Barack Obama knew that he wanted his arch rival, Hillary Clinton, to be his Secretary of State before the primaries were even over.
Before the primaries
were over. I picked up on it a little bit later and knew that it was an early decision, but I never realized until I saw it in Renegade.
Yeah, no, he told me.
It was that early.
He told me in the Oval Office, first print interview in the Oval Office, he said that it was before the primaries were over. And remember, this is a point of time when everyone around him still felt the rancor and the bitterness of the primary season.
I'm sure, including Michelle.
Including everyone. And by the way, when they discussed it in the transition, again, something I point out in the book, Clinton's supporters were saying, she's over it. He said, believe me, she's not over it yet.
Not over it yet. Well, we'll see whether she's over it now. Great reporting. Richard Wolff, this is a treat. Renegade for anyone who loved this campaign and all of us junkies did. The Making of a President, based on an exclusive interview with Barack Obama. Congratulations,
thank you,
my
thank
friend.
Thank you.
And you can watch part two of Brian's exclusive Inside the White House tonight at 9 o'clock Eastern.
I'm sorry, I had the mic down. I apologize, everybody. I played a long clip of Barack Obama and the interview that they did on MSNBC, because I'm doing a little look back. Excuse me for that little noise. I'm doing a little look back on Barack Obama's career and Bobby Rush's. It's called The Good Old Days, Barack Obama and Bobby Rush. See, I played the interview of his of them battling. I'm tripping now. I'm looking back at Donnie Trotter. Bobby Rush. Bobby Rush in trouble now with this Metro. Donnie Trotter with that gun. Jesse Jackson going to jail. These people used to beef with Barack Obama back in the day. I ain't saying that Barack Obama got a hit list for him, but it's real interesting. So I got about maybe one or two more clips I'm going to play. I'll go to commercial breaks. I'm driving my man Charles Love in here. 347-838-9825. But just listen to these clips. Barack Obama and Bobby Rush. Is any love lost, Bobby? And $50,000, I'm not saying you took that money. And I ain't saying nothing about no blacks ain't got no jobs, Bobby. And we're going to go back and follow the tape and look at your legislation. I mean, those things said in 2000, can we say them right now? But let me go and bring that man up. Maybe this is the one they was talking about, Barack Obama and Bobby Rush.
We are back on the road to City Hall tonight talking with author Richard Wolff about his book with exclusive interviews with President Obama. You're looking at the cover of it there. Now, Richard, again, you had unprecedented access. You write about, and this is remarkable, there was one incident when there was an apparent rift, shouting match, I'll let you describe it, between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton.
And the New York senator, right. Listen, it was December of 2007, before the voting began in Iowa, and their planes were parked on the tarmac at Washington National Airport, ready to go to Iowa. She calls him over on the tarmac to apologize for some comments about his youthful drug taking made by her campaign co-chair in New Hampshire. And she said, look, this stuff was out of bounds. This guy's going to quit from my campaign. I'm not having anything to do with it. And he goes, well, hey, it wasn't just that. I mean, there was the people who had the Muslim rumors that they were spreading on your campaign down in South Carolina. And she said, well, wait a second. You know, there's been your fundraiser in L.A. He came after me, and they started finger-pointing and jabbing each other and arms waving. And at one point, he puts his hand on her to say, you know, just chill. And apparently she just went completely crazy because, like, this was a patronizing thing, and who was he to touch her? And he comes back on his plane at the end of it, and he says to his aides, you know, I've never seen that look of concern in her eyes before. I think we can win this one. So he's a pretty cool guy under fire. I mean, he's having this, you know, face down with the biggest name in Democratic politics, and it's getting very heated, and he sees the weakness that he thinks, for the first time, he's got a crack to win there.
Now let's talk about race. You deal with it head on in this book. for any African American succeeding in mainstream America, you've got to walk that fine line mm-hmm. of corporate America, which is not easy.
Mm-hmm.
On any given day, mm-hmm. it's an issue. It may not be talked about, but it's an issue.
Sure it is.
And yet, he's running for president. He had the first real shot at winning. Initially in the campaign, there are African Americans saying he's not black enough. Of course, if he's too black, it turns off whites. How difficult of an issue was that for Barack Obama?
Well, it ran all the way through, and I put this in the book. It was uppermost in his mind when he was deciding to run. Not in the way you'd think. Not how can I get whites to vote for me, or what are African Americans going to think about me. His thinking behind that was, if I'm president, what kind of impact is that going to have, especially on young African-American boys? What's that going to do to what they think they can achieve? That was a big, big deal for him. He never talked about that. That was just there. And, you know, he always wanted to give a speech on race. His aide said, no, it's not the right time, never the right time. Of course, Jeremiah Wright, his pastor in Chicago, made it the right time, but much, much later on. And here's the thing about him. He obviously grew up in a white family in Hawaii, and he found a way to cross this line, as he told me. You know, it's about crossing the line. It's about, and it's not just about race. It's about class as well. Remember, he had this middle class life in Hawaii. Really, he goes to Chicago, works as a community organizer on the South Side. He's with working folks. Michelle Obama's family are working people. So that gives you a political talent in a way, and a social ability to move between different worlds. And I'm reminded by something that Craig Robinson said, Michelle's brother. He said, look, this isn't an unusual situation. It's unusual maybe for a politician. We haven't seen politicians do this kind of thing. But he said, for people like me, talking about himself, talking about Craig Robinson, you know, went to Princeton, has to come back to his community in the South Side of Chicago. He said, we have to deal with this all the time because we have to say to the folks back home, we're still part of the community, but we're also got the kind of education that takes us to a different place, a professional place. And that's who he is. He's a guy who can move between different worlds, whether it's race or class, and they are both difficult lines to cross. I think that's a key part of how he connected with people. And, you know, one, he lost a race in 2000, a congressional race against Bobby Rush in Chicago. And one of his mentors told me he lost because he was bad at ethnic politics. I mean, this is not a guy who does ethnic politics well. And that's actually why he's president. If he'd won, he'd never have run for president. He'd never been in position to. So it races all the way through. All the way through.
Very interesting. Was there ever a point privately? Publicly, and I haven't met him yet, but publicly he appears to be cool as a cucumber.
Yeah.
Was there ever, and I'm being a little sarcastic because we all know that no one is as cool as a cucumber, but was there ever a point when he said, as an African American, I can't do this publicly? I think I can, but I don't know if I can make it to this level.
Well, not as an African American. I think, look, there were times when he had real doubts. He didn't like being a candidate in the first year. He really thought it was miserable. He called the whole experience a public colonoscopy. I mean, you know, it was painful, the whole thing. Everything was playing out in public. He missed his family. He thought after they lost in New Hampshire, this is, you know, after he won in Iowa, lost in New Hampshire, he thought he was heading for respectable second place. That's what he told his friends. So he had to sort of...
Yeah. Look back at Barack. All the black boys don't want to be Barack. So much high expectations, Obama. Man, I fell out with my homies over Obama. I can remember talking to him, one of my friends. He called me a stupid, dumb motherfucker to ever think that Barack Obama was ever going to be Hillary Clinton. Black boys know they can be president, but what have you done to show them boys the power of your authority? I mean, hell, even George Bush got Africa chocking. There's parts of Africa you can't go in, homie, because your stance on homosexuality, the wars going on. Let me go to Bobby Rush now, straight up.
Racial profiling has to stop, Mr. Speaker.
just because someone wears a hoodie does not make them a hoodlum. The Bible teaches us, Mr. Speaker, in the book of Micah 6:6-8,
the member will suspend.
These words,
the member will.
These words. He has shown you, O man,
the member will
what is
suspend.
Good.
The chair must remind
what does
members
not,
of
what does
five,
the Lord
rule
require
17,
you, but to do justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God. And in the New Testament, Luke 4:18-20 teaches us these words. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to proclaim the good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and the recovery of sight to the blind, to set the oppressed free. I urge all who hear these words to heed these lessons. May God bless Trayvon Martin's soul, his family.
The member is no longer recognized.
And Mr. Rush, you're quoting the Bible. The Lord ought to strike you dead for reading from Luke's Gospel, chapter 4:18. Since when have you been proclaimed to preach the gospel? All the bribes you've taken, all the babies you've aborted, all the legislation you've mangled. Bobby Rush, who the, what is going, what is going on? What's going on? Why can't somebody just say, Trayvon Martin should have not been killed. He was murdered, but on the other hand, he shouldn't wear hoodies either. Just because something is lawful. By the way, Mr. Rush, why don't you go to Corinthians, where it says, just because something is lawful don't mean it is expedient. And just because you can wear what you want to wear, it don't mean that everything that you put on is always appropriate under every circumstance. Why can't black leaders say that for just one time? Why can't they just say that and begin healing rather than this continued division? They're going to kill more black people. Somebody might kill Bobby Rush if you don't take that hoodie off his head pretty soon. Look at the way he looks. He looks like a stumble bum. He looks like he's drunk anyway. Look at Bobby Rush. You better not walk on the south side. I guarantee. I tell you what, Bobby Rush. I tell you what. Put that hoodie on. Put on a pair of Air Jordans and a pair of black pants and walk around south side of Chicago at 11:30 at night or 1 o'clock in the morning. I guarantee you, you ain't man enough to put that hoodie on and walk around on the south side of Chicago after midnight. I guarantee you, you won't do it. You won't do it. Because you know that somebody will take you out. Because you know that hoodies and violence in the black neighborhood is off the charts. And you won't wear that hoodie. You'll put it on the floor of the house, but you won't put it on the south side of Chicago. Because you are lying, slivering, racist fool is what you are.
Racial profiling has to stop, Mr. Speaker. Just because someone wears a hoodie does not make them a hoodlum. The Bible teaches us, Mr. Speaker, in the book of Micah 6:6-8,
the member will suspend.
These words.
The member will.
These words. He has shown you, O man.
The member will
what is
suspend.
Good.
The chair must remind
what does not,
of
what does
five,
the Lord
rule
require
17,
you, but to do justly. And to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. And in the New Testament, Luke 4:18-20 teaches us these words. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to proclaim the good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and the recovery of sight to the blind, to set the oppressed free. I urge all who hear these words to heed these lessons. May God bless Trayvon Martin's soul, his family.
The member is no longer recognized.
Now, let me ask you a question. Does it say something about black people that people like Congressman Bobby Rush, Maxine Waters, and others have weighed in on this matter of Trayvon Martin, and they are not willing to accept that he possibly could have done anything wrong. Does it say that this is that there can never be any justice, and that there can never be any growth or learning and development when everybody is running this black running to the aid of Trayvon Martin and not willing to accept the fact that he could have done anything wrong? Now let me clarify my position. I believe that Trayvon Martin was murdered. I believe that the motivation for his murder was racism. I've given the analogy of this. If Trayvon Martin had a gun that night, George Zimmerman would be dead. If George Zimmerman had not disobeyed a direct order from the police department, Trayvon Martin would be alive. But for black leaders to defend a culture that speaks violence. By that I mean hoodies. Bobby Rush just put on a hoodie and was driven from the congressional well to floor because he was out of order. But preachers, black leaders, are defending Trayvon Martin as having done nothing wrong. Now, I guess that's the way of the world. Let me say this before I show you Bobby Rush and the statements of Maxine Waters. I understand that a lot of preachers last Sunday wore hoodies to the pulpit. Now, hoodies are, the best thing you can say about them are dress that youthful people use and wear. But they're also associated with violence. And you might have taken notice of the fact that the Grim Reaper wears a hoodie. And that usually robberies take place, people wearing hoodies. Now, here's the argument. Well, you ought not shoot a man because he's wearing a hoodie. You're right about that. You ought to be able to wear what you want to wear, when you want to wear it, where you want to wear it. Well, it might be lawful, but is it expedient? And by that I mean this. If a particular garment is associated with a particular lifestyle, and you don't want to be identified with that lifestyle, then don't put on the garment. You know, if you're not a policeman, don't put on a policeman's uniform. Now, prostitutes on what they call the stroll, the streetwalker prostitutes, wear stiletto heels, fishnet stockings, jacked up skirts. You can even see their crotch. What breasts they got, they show you all of that. You can see everything. It's a prostitute's outfit. It's what prostitutes wear. They dress seductively. They dress exposing what men want, their crotch and their breasts. All the emphasis of the things that they wear are on that. So now, should the preacher's wife that put on a hoodie come to church dressed like a prostitute? There might be a whole lot of men in the church who already know she's a prostitute, but that hasn't been said. You see, it might be lawful, but if you don't want to look like a prostitute, then a preacher's wife shouldn't put on a prostitute's garment. And if you don't want to look like a thug, if you don't want to look like you're associated with violence, then don't put on a hoodie. This don't make no sense that black leaders are so devoid of understanding. We wear what we want. We shouldn't be shot just because we... Well, you know, the outfit of a prostitute is not appropriate for a pastor's wife. Well, let me take that back. It might be appropriate for a whole lot of pastors' wives and all that, but a whole lot of church women. In fact, many of them probably have the spirit of a prostitute. Oh, Lord, I just got myself in a whole lot of trouble now. But you see, simply because something is lawful don't mean it's expedient. Anyway, Bobby Rush put on a hoodie on the floor of the Congress. Does the word hoodie, I know it comes from hood, little red riding hood, but it also associated itself with hoodlums. You know, this is so tragic. This is so tragic that people like Bobby Rush would stand up and support this. I understand that black men and black people and people in general should not be shot down because they are wearing a particular outfit. But the thing that they don't say is that you possibly can be shot down, so don't wear it until we can rehabilitate it. Don't wear it. Don't put it on. Don't put on a Ku Klux Klan suit and walk down Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Harlem. Don't do it. You're asking for trouble, even though you have a right to wear what you want to wear. Why can't they say that for one time? Why can't some public official, why can't some black person say that for just one time? Yes, you shouldn't be shot down because you have on a hoodie. But on the other hand, if it is the object of anger and animosity and violence, then don't wear it until it can be rehabilitated. Why continue to send black youth out into the street against those laws? Is that so difficult to understand? Is that so difficult to understand? It's so pathetic. There's something wrong with black people. It ain't the hoodie that's the problem. There's something wrong with black people. There's been something wrong with them for a long time. And only God can help them. Only God. We want to remind you that...
Did you know it? Partners in Community Building focuses on credit building, financial literacy, and home ownership for residents throughout Chicago and Illinois. All of our services are free. Call 312-328-0873 to get additional information on our home ownership counseling, rental assistance, Cook County foreclosure mediation, and small accessible repairs for seniors programs. PCIB is a HUD-certified nonprofit counseling agency committed to addressing the housing needs of all people. Call 312-328-0873 to schedule an appointment or visit us at www.pcibchicago.org.
For true inspiration, check out singer, songwriter, and radio personality Sylvia Fedrick. Sylvia, your sister under God's construction, brings to you her best in Christian contemporary gospel tunes, and they are available for download at www.sangsyl.com. That's SANGSYL.com. Or you can visit her profile at Chicago Black Business Network. For bookings, call Sassy Michelle at 512-914-4221.
Want to learn the secrets of the wealthy? Do you think that the wealthy sell their gold and silver, or do they buy gold and silver? Learn to create wealth, collect wealth, and preserve wealth for you and future generations. Find out how you can acquire free silver every month. Visit goldandsilverplan.com. That's goldandsilverplan.com. What you don't know can keep you struggling financially. What you know can change your life. Be in the know. Visit goldandsilverplan.com today.
Hey, you want more money in your pocket, right? Savers are losers, unless you save like the rich and beat inflation. The secret? Save the right kind of money. Pure, solid, 24-karat gold or silver for as little as 20 bucks a week, direct from the mint. Don't spend money. Exchange bad money for good money. Start today at SaveMetalMoney.com. That's SaveMetalMoney.com. The chains of slavery in the modern world are not forged with links of iron, but with the bonds of limiting ideas and debt.
Be in business for yourself, but not by yourself. Team up with a company voted the 57th most promising by Forbes. With no money to collect from your customers, no credit checks, and no cost for you to join. Visit electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288. That's electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288.
Hi there, I'm the X-Man, Xavier Paul. I'm a national network voiceover talent. You've heard my voice represent hundreds of brands and businesses for the past 15 years. Well, now it's your turn. I understand how important it is to promote your business or event in the right way. That starts with quality radio spot production and the nation's top voiceover talent. You might wonder, how do I get started? What's the best approach? What voice talent do I use? And most importantly, can I do it affordably? That's why I created CoolVoiceRadio.com. I take you to the finish line, giving you everything you need to advertise effectively on the radio. I'll help you create your concept, write your spot, even choose your music and cast your voice talent and get it aired on the radio. Now that's cool. Email me today at info@coolvoiceradio.com or call 646-326-7800 because nothing beats the right sound.
Wouldn't you just like to feel clean again? In Chicago and surrounding areas, Unique Towel Cleaning Service is the best cleaning service. We do basic cleaning and super cleaning, offices and apartment buildings. We will even clean your barber shop, your beauty shop, your spa or restaurant's towels and aprons. Call Unique Towel Cleaning Service at 773-484-5027. Ask us about our very special offer for our new clients. Call us at 773-484-5027 today and feel clean again.
Hello, this is Prentice L. Allison, founder and president of SPSI, Service Perfect Solutions Incorporated, a network of financial service professionals teaching people how to use life insurance and annuities to retain more of their income and pay the least tax on it. Our toll-free number is 877-902-9048. We are proud to have serviced more than 500 clients, national and international, from ages 0 to 99 for the past 30 years. My tip to you today is, if you are a business owner with at least one employee, including yourself, it would behoove you to get business life insurance. Why? Thank you for asking. 7 points I want to leave with you. Your premiums are tax deductible. Your policy bills cash tax deferred. Your cash reserve inside the policy is yours to use tax free. The policy will replace your income if death occurred prematurely. The company will pay the premiums if you become disabled. The policy will return all premiums to you when you retire. Last but not least, make sure your agent is well experienced in business life insurance. Stay tuned for more tips on how to use life insurance and annuities to help yourself today and protect your family and business tomorrow. This is Prentice L. Allison, president of SPSI. Toll-free number is 877-902-9048. I wish you well, and to God be the glory.
If you're 17 and you wearing the hoodie, you're on the phone talking to your shorty. Make no mistake, there's one like you in every city. You know the story. He gon' creep up from behind, have you leave her before your time. By the time hobo show up, he gon' say he was so scared.
Follow me, get on your jack, tell them to come get me. You better get your gun, you be the judge, jury. We gotta make better war moves. Police the pigs, polish our own tools. Fight back, become a force to be reckoned. Let them feel the consequence, pulling that weapon. They do what they wanna do, who they think they can. In a stand, it's no respect for the black man. What's the solution? The ballot of the bullet, G. Give me that pistol, that vote never give us free. I tell the young people, go ahead, protest. Petition, picket signs, citizens arrest. Just know we get war, so get your game face on. Hoodie on, I bomb first, betray on.
I'm tired of the marching, the rallying, and the protesting. We hooping and hollering, still we getting no justice. To Daniel Diallo, Bell, Grant, and Trayvon. It's the free mix on your radio station. Turn it up so you can drown out all the media hype. We plot, planning, and strategizing, ready to fight. The government ain't gonna stop it as long as they make a profit off our criminalization. Our people gonna be your target. Justin Sippin, Wendell Allen, who gonna be next? Fuck the talking, get some power, then we get some respect. When
I die, don't put me on a shirt, my nigga. Be a revolutionary, make them hurt, my nigga. That's a quote from New York Money, that's my RBG family. Sick man, Mike Flow, most deficit insanity. Cause we do the same thing, expecting different results. I'm checking the vital signs, but I ain't getting no pulse.
Peace, a view from a true G perspective. These mic machines to pose all the questions. Say your point in here to uphold justice. But it get denied, yo, they cheat and they lie, folks. Hate views, fake moves, and why hostile. Young black world in a struggle for survival. Great stress and effects, disrespect, disconnect. Dirt and wisely, skittles and nice teeth. Gunshots and blood that breaks the night breeze. And several point is judged, it might be Nazis. Insecurity, identity doubt. You think that they see a neighbor? They see a villain is out. The standard answer, it was random police movement and conclusive confusion. The present news clips, callous bullshit. Every talking head is clueless. Many circle channels stupid. Sick in the town, we know it's been that. It's time to fix that for every place we live at. Put in work where we are to change the whack track. Then make you holler in the hour where they say that. They shooting. Made you die. I act as if the murder innocence is not crime. Killers on the run, watch them and your time's up. Mr. Murderer, where you hiding at? They shooting. Made you die. I act as if the murder innocence is not crime. Killers on the run, watch them and your time's up. I hope you hear this right where you hiding at. Trayvon,
who are you?
Trayvon, Trayvon,
who are you?
Trayvon, played those two cuts because people hit me up on the chat room talking about, am I dissing Trayvon? Now that last guy was talking about the misrepresentation of a hoodie on the congressional floor with Bobby Rush. He could have went up there and passed legislation about the stand your ground law and how they should investigate the whole switch. I mean, no need to say I'm on here with a hoodie, no need to get shot. That was just him probably making a protest, but I do stand in solidarity with Trayvon Martin. That's why I wrote those songs. Now, check it out. Let me go on some stuff that's jumping off here in Chicago. These are new laws that have been passed by this alderman here that's trying to get a $1,500 fine for littering. Check it out.
He's backing a watered-down proposal to fine drivers who toss trash out the windows of their vehicles. 21st Ward Alderman Howard Brookings' original proposal would fine drivers $1,500 for littering and allow the city to tow their vehicles. The new ordinance would give the city the discretion to tow and raise the minimum fine for littering from $50 to $150. And
$50 to $150.
Crackdown on littering from vehicles. In addition to boosting fines, the city is considering towing any vehicles where people are caught dumping garbage out on the Chicago streets. ABC 7's Leo Hope has more on this proposed littering law.
This will not do for Ethel Hunter. She won't allow others' bad habits to impact the look of her home.
It does take an effort, and all of us have to work together. Take care of your house. And if you see something, don't be ashamed to pick up paper.
I want to get people's attention. I want them to stop the behavior. I want people to be able to feel good about their communities and their neighborhoods and not have to look at all of this trash and litter throughout the community.
Alderman Howard Brookings has introduced an anti-litter ordinance that would increase fines from $50 to $150 with a maximum of $1,500 in fines. And your car could be towed if you're witnessed throwing trash from your car. The alderman's efforts to clean up neighborhoods is already getting attention and support from Mayor Emanuel.
It impacts the quality of life in a neighborhood. It's a beginning process of, in my view, of degrading not only a neighborhood, leading to crime. And I do believe that those that are littering, as if it's not any concern of those, you're going to pay a bigger penalty and a bigger price.
Members of the Brainerd Alumni Association are eager for anything to reduce random trash found in their neighborhood.
To wake people up to the idea that you need to throw your garbage away. I mean, we all want a clean community. I mean, and no one should have to live in with other people's garbage all over the streets. So, I mean, and it starts with the adults.
Kids are out here throwing this stuff around. We got kids that come to the park right now and empty dumpsters and just run off like it's nothing. So if they're being fined for what their kids are doing, then maybe they'll take more ownership of what their children are doing.
For now, they will continue their monthly neighborhood cleanups of other people's trash. in the Brainerd neighborhood, we are host ABC 7 News.
Tired, stressed out, or just need me or we time? Then Phoenix Rising, Baltimore's exclusive bed and breakfast, is the place for you. Phoenix Rising offers an unforgettable, rejuvenating experience with exquisite guest rooms. Find peace and calm in the Sedona Room or Haitian Room, or relax in front of a marble fireplace in the Serengeti Room. Call 410-462-2692 today to schedule your escape to Phoenix Rising. Visit us online at phoenixrising.com.
Even superheroes gotta be healthy. Get the Sister Girl Workout Book, a graphic novel available this Black History Month at the DuSable Museum Trading Post gift shop located at 56 and Cottage Grove in Chicago. There you'll find our growing line of hot Black Age graphic novels, or visit Only Studios at www.onlistudios.com. Plus, get your own Only Wears Art Star Denim Jacket. These one-of-a-kind special designs are available now at the Elephant Room Gallery at 703 South Wabash in Chicago. Only's wearable art brings out the art star in you. Indie today, Black Age forever at www.onlistudios.com.
$1,500 of towing and towing your car for throwing your ticket bus out the window. Now, that's what we got here. Now, they want to say Chicago is not going bankrupt. Well, if you're trying to sit there and find ways of hitting your taxpayer with fines and fees, tow your car, you get two tickets from towing your car. You get two tickets here in Chicago, your car gets towed. You get hit with two red light cameras making right turns on the corner, and the next day your car's towed. It's a racket. And someone should look at the city towing cars. Well, like if the city towed your car, they should be responsible for the bill. Period. But anyway, 1999, Bobby Rush did run for mayor. Lost it daily. But someone said it was just a spoiler. I'm a guy that ran against him. But everybody backed up on Russ. Like, we don't want you. 2000, they feel he was gung-ho. Barack Obama, Donnie Trotterville came out of it. That was a real sluggish election. I mean, it was smooth jumping on Obama. 2 years later, you know, I wrote Obama back then when he was running for Congress, and I wrote when he was running for Senate. That was a wild election there. But it's funny hearing how he's looking at Black America. How he wanted Black America to look at him. And Black America still is holding in high reverence. But looking back at the 2008 election and how everybody was feeling, you know, I just questioned myself and wondering what was my expectations. Because, you know, like the gentleman said, I mean, be too black, you're scared right away. Be too white, you're scared all the blacks away. He did play a thin line. I did think you was going to look at H.R. 42, reparations bill. I thought it was going to get into that. I thought he was going to keep student loans at a minimum. They're inflated. I thought the health care bill would be different than what it is. I don't believe that you should pay a fine for health care. Chicago had a great model for health care. Our taxes paid for it. We had county care. We paid taxes for it. You can go to any hospital in Chicago, pay a small fee.
Most of the services taken care of by the taxpayers. Each state can implement their own form of health care. The federal government got to really deal with it. I didn't think Obama would be dealing with immigration like he's dealing with it. I thought the Dream Act would be going more to, African Americans. I mean, what the Dream Act is. Reparations for Spanish people, Spanish legal citizens to get them out the shadows. I got a call, I'm just calling, going blind. I got about 12 minutes. Oh. You're the one? Okay. What's going on, Carl? Hello, how you doing?
Yeah, this is Black Achievement. How you doing, Jimmy?
Fine, yourself. What's going on, my friend?
Oh, great. I'm listening to you speak on the president, and of course, I think you're much too kind. Much too kind. 8 years, or what, he's six, 5 years in, or 6 years, whatever it is. And, he's one of the worst presidents in the last 50 years for blacks. You know, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, and I hate to say for blacks, because the only thing I can say, this is truthfully, because it makes my black children, my black male sons and daughters know that they can achieve for the highest office. And the symbolism that he represents, I will never take down, but it's so hard to say, you know. And I'm not going to be like everyone else that say, give him a second term, he'll do better. I expected more in his first term because I didn't think they would give him a second term. And I'm just really upset at the Dream Act itself, because to make an illegal citizen get legal rights, and if you're a 16-year-old guy on a block getting busted selling marijuana, and you have a baby, you know, grow up to be a man, have children, you can go see your kids no longer, and they stay on government property. You're in the shadows. You can't get a job no more. You're in the shadows. I mean, do something for those individuals. You know what I'm saying? Something for the small people. Just something for the small people.
Right. Let me ask you this as well, because whenever the issues of black upliftment, you know, black people really getting a piece of the action, a piece of the pie, as you will, whenever that issue comes up, the media, the mass media, tends to deflect on things that really don't have nothing to do with black people upliftment. For example, the comments made by Don Lemon, stop using the N-word, pull your pants up, take care of your children. I mean, what does that have to do with, in the context of black people striving in this country? That, to me, that has nothing. First, I can't make a man pull his pants up. I can't make a man who's producing records stop using the N-word. And even if they did, what does that do for the upliftment of black people? We still where we are? That doesn't, to me, I think they bring up issues that are really not germane. And people who feel, you know, use the N-word, or some of the young folk, they really don't care about black upliftment. If you're a man that don't want to take care of his children, what do you care in terms, you're not conscious, no way.
Right.
I just don't understand why the media, you know, put ourselves in this quicksand, this quagmire, issues that really have nothing to do with black progress. Nothing.
Because they're using the baggy pants, Jay-Z said nigga, to be like, oh, let me blow all of that up. I mean, there's wiggers right now wearing their pants down, listening to Jay-Z, mobbing people out there. What's my California? Was that happening? Huntington Beach, California, turning over,
right,
over stalls. People raping women, beat people down. I mean, you know, but you don't hear none of that because they're not going to project that. As long as we sit there and put the sound bites up, that if we pull up our pants and stop saying niggers, maybe the white man will like us. Maybe that's what Don Lemon is saying. And I'm embarrassed to Don Lemon for saying that, but maybe he's just happy that no one is dissing him because of his sexuality, and he's willing to say everything. And anybody will bring him on a set and listen to him, and he'd probably be happy for that. And that's what I got to say about Don Lemon.
Yeah, and, you know, you remember the Hurricane Sandy that ripped through mostly in the Jersey Shore, the little seaside oceanfront properties. Now, here's the thing. Now, you and I both know there's risk to developing, to buying real estate on the shore. And, you know, in any moment, a hurricane could come, could flood you out, could knock over some windows, whatever. You need to get some insurance if you want to live there, right? But when that happens, nobody told those people in New Jersey you should get some insurance or should have some insurance. No. The president came through and said, here goes $60 billion. And they put no responsibility on the people who own the property. None.
Right.
He gave them $60 billion.
So, Louisiana fight for scraps because they can't get no business over because the BP and not oil on their land. There's black businesses down in Louisiana that still can't come up and running. And you're right. And they've been asking federal dollars. They said, no, that's a BP problem.
I think I know you're winding down, but I think with the president, when there was an issue where white folk were in need of assistance and help, be it the tornadoes in Oklahoma, be it the hurricanes that took place, Obama was always front and center. What can I do to help? What do you need? It was no amount too large that Obama wouldn't bend over backwards to tell the Congress to take care of these people. But when it came to African Americans, it's like, pull your pants up. Take care of your kids. What the hell does that got to do with all these damn foreclosures in the black community?
Right. With high teen unemployment. He's a community organizer. He knows what causes disturbance in communities, and he should know what the solution was, because I'm not going to front for disclosure. I ran with Barack Obama against Bobby Rush. I ain't funny. The name's not funny, and Rush is acting funny. I ran with Obama. I was one of the few black people that was down with Obama when he ran for the Senate down here. I ain't funny. And I did vote for him, but I ain't funny for the symbolism imagery. I'm really disappointed, and my heart is heavy because he's worse than George Bush Sr. was to African Americans. I mean, at least Ronald Reagan signed the Martin Luther King bill. At least George Bush gave you Colin Powell and Clarence Thomas. I mean, saying these are, cause I mean, you know, you gave us Susan Rice. I'm gonna watch Susan Rice. Oh, she like, you know, she might be great. I mean, give us some black people in position of power.
Right.
I got to control the whole powerful army of everybody. That's Ronald Reagan. I'm being Secretary of Defense. I'm being Secretary of State. Condi Rice, tell me what's going on. Guide my nation. Be my advisor of the whole nation. These are not no time-ass spots. You don't give a time-ass spot. No spot like that to guard the whole country. You don't give no time, no spot over defense, Secretary of State, and security. You know, Obama, can we get something like that? Show somebody that you feel that blacks are qualified to do something important. You ain't got to pass on legislation. That's something of importance. That's all I'm saying. You know what I'm saying? That's all I'm saying. Listen, you got anything you want to say to my people going in there, Malvi? Any promotion you want to go in there, promote it, going out. You got a show? Let me know about your show, man. Go ahead, do your thing.
Yeah, I got a show coming up Wednesday. I'm gonna wrap up on the Zimmerman decision that farce down in Florida. I'm gonna wrap that up. I'm gonna say all I got to say on that and put it to rest.
Well, can you give you a little insight? Just a little bit, a little insight, so we can tune in. What you might be talking about?
Well, what I'm gonna get at what the real issues were in that whole trial, that whole situation. Okay, it had nothing to do with stand your ground. It had nothing to do with some of the issues people are talking about down there now with the boycotting. The whole issue is this. Black youth, black men, young men, they are obsolete. Nobody gives a damn about them. They offer nothing to society. So when you go before a court, the court looks at you as a waste. as something that we could just run and walk over. It happens every day in the courtrooms. We need to stop acting brand new like this just occurred with Trayvon Martin. This occurs all over the country. You kill a black man, you complete bargain down to nothing. If a black man is a victim of a crime, he goes to the DA and says, I want to press charges. The DA will throw his ass out of his office because nobody's going to believe him. He talks like a thug. He looks like a thug. That's the end of that. That happens in courtrooms all across the country. And that was the issue in the Trayvon Martin case. It happened the night he got killed. When the police arrived on the scene, the reason why they didn't collect any DNA, because damn it, they didn't do an investigation. They saw his dead body down there, and they let his ass just shrivel away. And they didn't care.
So well, listen, that's hot. And I wish you could, when you're done with that, I want to run that back on my show. You know, have my listeners over there. I don't know, what time is your show? If you're in conflict, you know, I would love you to come on my show and bring that to my audience also. You know,
I'll send your message, Jimmy. I'm on at 6:30, but I'll send your message. We could do that. We could talk more, a little bit more in depth, what you won't hear on Anderson Cooper, what you won't hear on Piers Morgan, what the real issue are confronting young black men. We need to stop acting like we don't know, okay? We need to stop acting like we don't know what the real issues are and what needs to happen in order for us to move ahead, because we keep going in circles, man. We keep, like I said, we're moving in quicksand.
Yeah. Well, listen, I got this 96 wrapping up. Listen, Wednesday, y'all heard we're going to do this Wednesday. And I'm going to try to put a little promo, and I just have you back on here Wednesday, my friend. I want to hear some more of that, because that's really in-depth. I appreciate
okay.
you being on. This is Jimmy Underground Radio, everybody. Good night. And may your God be with you, everybody.
Information to peace of the world. They've been spending most of their life living in the past time.